I want us this morning to imagine ourselves as miners. What kind of job would we have if we were miners? I mean actual miners, miners in a literal sense. Would it be easy? Does anyone remember what happened a couple years ago in Chile? Those miners were trapped maybe a mile below the surface for several days, if I'm not mistaken. They had to ration food, maybe lighting was low. It'd be a terrible place to be, wouldn't it? To be trapped in a mine far below the Earth's surface. But why do we do that? Why do we as human beings go to great depths? What are we searching for? Well, in many occasions, we're searching for precious gems, gold, silver, even salt. Salt mines. The other day, I stumbled on a video that actually has something to do with this lesson, because it has to do with a mine. And it was a YouTube video. It was entitled, The Lake That Disappeared. The Lake That Disappeared. I don't know if this was in Louisiana or one of these states in the south. It was the Diamond Crystal Salt Mine. And this occurred, if I'm not mistaken, in the 1980s, maybe 1982 or so. They had been digging below the surface in search of salt, and the mine was quite large, and it actually, part of it went below a lake. And so some smart fellows got together and they started drilling for oil right there on the lake without realizing that they perforated part of the mine. And the entire lake started to drain into the salt mine. At first it was just a small whirlpool, but it got bigger and bigger and bigger, so big that it sucked down cars and barges and everything that was close to the lake. And essentially, if I'm not mistaken, the lake disappeared. How would you like to be caught in a mine when something like that happens? Fortunately, those workers got out in time. That's a tough job, job of being a miner. Back in 1986 or so, I really wanted to go to Australia. I developed a fascination with the country and even got this huge travel book and started reading about it. And I thought to myself, I'm going to put some money aside and maybe to travel back in the 1980s or so from here to Australia, round trip by plane. It was a lot of money. I think I might have been looking at $3,000 or so. But I wasn't able to save enough money to make that trip, so it never happened. Several years later, while I was living in Spain, I saw a movie that supposedly was filmed in Australia. And the movie, if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong about this, the movie was entitled The Man from Snowy River. When I looked at the plot and the different details concerning the movie, I couldn't find this exact information that I want to share with you now. I remember the main character being a miner. The main character being a miner, and he had a small plot of land in which he looked for gold for more than 30 years. He was dirt poor. And everyone in the town, everyone in the area kept telling him, you're wasting your time. No one's found gold in this area. There's no gold in this part of the country, they were telling him. Despite the efforts of the people in the town to discourage him, to get him to stop looking for gold, he continued searching for it. This man, as I mentioned before, was a miner. And he counted the cost and made many sacrifices in order to find what he was seeking. Nobody, for many years, nobody helped him. The work was difficult. It required much sacrifice. However, this man continued with his eyes focused on the goal. That was to find gold. And he finally found it. I hope I'm talking about the same movie. I hope this is also found in the movie The Man from Snowy River. But I'm not exactly sure. But the point here is that he was willing to make the sacrifices because he valued highly what he was seeking. He placed a high value on what he was seeking. What would have happened if he had not placed sufficient value on the gold that he was seeking? Obviously, he would have stopped digging. He would have stopped working in the mine. In contrast, he gave it everything he had and refused to quit because he valued highly what he was seeking. Have you ever noticed how recently there's a number of shows that have to do with digging for gold? The Discovery Channel, they've got a program called Gold Rush. I watched that a few times. On Animal Planet, they've got another one called Alaska Gold Diggers. And yet another one on the same channel, Ice Cold Gold. Even the Weather Channel has a program called Prospectors. I find that the most interesting. I watched that a few times. And that has to do with men and women in the hills of Colorado and other places searching for precious stones. And it's quite a dangerous work. You see how these guys will... They'll dig a hole about the size of a person and just keep digging in the side of a hill where there's rocks that are it's crumbling, and at any moment it can collapse on them. And yet why do they do this? Because they value what they're seeking. So much so that they're willing to risk their lives for it. They risk their lives at 14,000 feet above sea level to try to find these precious stones, the rarest gems in the U.S. In this lesson, I'd like to look at some similarities between, and I must have advanced that by accident. I'd like to look at some similarities between miners and Christians. And I want to envision ourselves, I want us to envision ourselves as miners, but we're spiritual miners. We're looking for something much more important than gold. We're looking for something much more important than diamonds and precious stones. And I'd like to start with this question. Do we value our salvation like a miner values gold? Are we willing to give everything for this in order that we might have salvation like this fellow, the man from Snowy River, spent 30 years looking for gold on that property, even though people were discouraging him and telling him, you're not going to find it, you're wasting your time? Do we value our salvation like a miner values gold? In a symbolic sense, Christians are like miners. We find ourselves in a mine. In this case, the mine would be the world. And it's necessary for us to dig or to work in order to attain God's blessings. You know, I find it interesting. Why is it that God has placed certain things that we value highly in hard to get to places? Why has he done it that way? Could he not be trying to teach us something by placing just a measly number of diamonds in a huge coal mine? You've got to dig out tons and tons of diamonds. You have to be persistent. Tons and tons of coal. You have to be persistent in order to find those precious stones. Why is it that God has done things this way? Could he not be trying to teach us something? That we need to be willing to make a sacrifice for that which has a high value. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15, Paul talked in this passage how he preached, talked about how he preached the gospel to the Christians in Corinth. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15, starting in verse 1, he says, "Now I make known to you, brethren, the gospel which I preached to you, which you also received, in which also you stand, by which also you are saved, if you hold fast the word which I preached to you, unless you believed in vain." Very small word in verse 2, the word "if" contains a big condition. He's talking about the salvation that the Christians in Corinth enjoy through Jesus Christ. He's really talking about our salvation. We enjoy the same salvation, but he says that we can be assured of that salvation if we hold fast the word which Paul has preached to us. Paul, of course, continues to preach today by means of this word. We, as Christians, have the responsibility of holding fast this word in order to make our salvation sure. But later in the same chapter, in verse 58, Paul continues encouraging the brethren in Corinth by saying, "Therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your toil is not in vain in the Lord." Now, here we are in this world as spiritual miners. And our goal is to reach salvation. We want to live with God after this life is concluded. It's not easy living in this mind. It requires sometimes diligent sacrifice. It's necessary to dig in order to attain the blessings that God offers us. Paul said to the Galatians about this idea of, it has to do with this idea of persevering and not growing weary. He says in Galatians chapter 6, verse 9, "Let us not lose heart in doing good, for in due time we will reap if we do not grow weary." You see, the tendency is for Christians to get tired of living the life. And they start looking back to the life they had before they obeyed the gospel. They want to throw in the towel. Sometimes it's tough being a Christian. If anyone ever told you it was otherwise, then he wasn't telling you the truth. Being a Christian in this mind, in this world, is hard sometimes. But if we don't grow weary, in due time we will reap. We're going to reach that treasure. But we have to keep digging. We have to keep working at it. In another passage, Paul said to the Philippians, in Philippians chapter 2, verse 12. Philippians chapter 2, verse 12. Paul says, "So then, my beloved, just as you have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your salvation with fear and trembling." There's a very prevalent idea that exists in the religious world today, and that is that you don't have to do anything with respect to your salvation, right? Once saved, always saved. You're saved by faith. And there's nothing that you can do to lose your salvation. So works have nothing to do with it at all. Why does Paul say in this verse that we should work out our salvation with fear and trembling? Why did Paul say in 1 Corinthians chapter 15 that we have to persevere in the gospel that was preached to us? And if we don't, then our faith would be in vain. See, being in this mind requires work. And we're not going to reach the blessings that God offers us unless we keep digging. It's hard at times. Sometimes we want to throw in the towel. But we have to keep trusting in the Lord, focus our eyes on the goal, not give up. James chapter 2, verse 24, talks about the importance of works in our lives as Christians. James says in chapter 2, verse 24, "You see that a man is justified by works and not by faith alone." You see, the man who believes he's saved by faith alone can just take the pick and the shovel and just stand there in the cave. "I've got my ticket punched to heaven. I'm going to reach what's at the end of that cave. I'm going to reach the treasure without doing anything. I don't have to move a single load of coal in order to reach the diamonds, or I don't have to remove rocks in order to reach the gold veins. I don't have to do anything." This is the prevalent idea that exists in the religious world today. Salvation is by faith alone. And Jude tells us, with other words, about the importance of working towards this goal. He says, Jude verse 3 says, "Beloved, while I was making every effort to write you about our common salvation, I felt the necessity to write you appealing that you contend earnestly for the faith which was once for all handed down to the saints." As Christians, we are to contend earnestly. That requires efforts. So we find ourselves in a mind. The mind is the world. And it's necessary for us to dig or to work in order to receive these blessings that God has for us. There are three types of minors. Three types of minors. First of all, there's the rebellious minor. That's the fellow who doesn't want to work at all. He says there's no gold, nor diamonds, nor any treasure worth finding in this mine. You all are wasting your time. This is just a bunch of nonsense. It's a bunch of hogwash. We could be doing something else with our time. Watching a football game or out on a picnic somewhere. And it's not enough for this miner to stop digging. He also tries to discourage others from digging. There's a brother who's a member of this local church who unfortunately has gone back to the world. He's gone back to his atheism. He's gone back to evolutionist teachings. And it's not enough for him to believe those things, that we're here by chance, that God, a personal God, really doesn't exist. But he tries to encourage others to believe like he does. He's been doing that on Facebook. Did some of that with Art Snyder, who is not here this morning. He's done some of that with me. Gary has written him pretty regularly. But it's not enough for some miners to say, hey, listen, there's no gold at the end of the mine. Stop. It's not enough for them to stop working. What they want to do is they want to get you to stop working too. They tell us, do you really think you're going to find something in this mine? Who brainwashed you into believing that you're really going to find gold after all of this digging? Jesus talked about those who really refused to hear his word, refused to follow him. In Matthew chapter 23, the verse that's on the screen, in verse 36 or 37, he talks about the inhabitants of Jerusalem, those who had rejected him as the Christ. And he says, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, who kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to her. How often I wanted to gather your children together, the way a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, and you were unwilling. Another version of the Bible says, and you would not. You see, there are some people who refuse to dig in the mine. And they'll tell us there's nothing at the end of it. What are we going to do? Are we going to let their words discourage us? Or are we going to keep on digging? Then there's the unstable or the inconstant miner. He says, you know, I don't feel like working in the mine today. The work is hard. I'm tired. It's boring. I'm getting tired looking at coal all the time. You know, digging all this, through all this coal, removing all this coal from the mine, all these rocks from the mine, just for a little speck of gold. It's amazing. If you ever watch these programs, nowadays it's really hard to find gold. During the gold rush, I imagine it was a lot easier. But you take a look at these programs, Gold Rush and Ice Cold Gold, and you take a look at the machinery that they bring to these sites, these claims, and the tons of earth that they remove and sift in order to find gold dust. And yet that's what they do, because they place a high value on what they're seeking. But there are some who say, you know, I'm tired of all this work. I've got other more important things to do. This is too much sacrifice. And this miner allows himself to be overcome by doubts. You know, maybe he says to himself, maybe all these sacrifices, maybe it's just not worth it. It's not worth it to be so different from the world. It's not worth it to continue working in this mine. And James talks about these kinds of people in James chapter 1. James chapter 1, starting in verse 5. And he says there, but if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all generously and without reproach, and it will be given to him. But he must ask in faith without doubting. For the one who doubts is like the surf of the sea, driven and tossed by the wind. For that man ought not to expect that he will receive anything from the Lord, being a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways. I mentioned in another sermon years ago, in verse 8, this idea of being double-minded refers to split-mind condition. This individual suffers from spiritual schizophrenia. Can't make up his mind whether to serve God or to serve the world. If we're going to be good miners, we can't have that mentality. We can't have that mindset. Doubting will keep us from digging in the mine. But then we have the faithful miner. The faithful miner says to himself, you know, whatever others may say, I know that some are telling me to stop working. There's no gold at the end of the mine. There's no diamonds. They're telling me to give up. Whatever they may say or whatever they may do, I believe that there's gold at the end of this mine, and I won't stop digging until I've found it. I won't keep working until I reach the end of the mine or reach my goal. This is the most important work in the world, and I refuse to give up. That's what the faithful miner says. He fully commits himself to his work. He gives 100% to the effort, and he places a high value on the treasure that he seeks. He is fully convinced and refuses to leave the work, even when other miners try to discourage him. Now, what is our attitude? What is our attitude towards the heavenly treasure that God offers us? How much do we value the riches of Christ? And Christ does offer us riches, not material riches, but forgiveness, salvation, which is worth much more. Jesus, it shouldn't be surprising to us that Jesus talks to us in Matthew chapter 6 about making our treasure in heaven. Making our treasure in heaven. I asked the question earlier, why is it that God put these precious metals and gems and hard to get to places? I guess if they're easy to get to, then they wouldn't have the same value if they were everywhere, right? If gold were everywhere on the streets, we wouldn't place the same value on it. But he did place it in hard to get to places because he wants us to know what working towards treasure is like. He wants us to know how valuable it is and the effort that's required in order to get to it. And it's no wonder that Jesus talks about this, the idea of treasures in Matthew chapter 6, starting in verse 19. He says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in or steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." So the faithful miner focuses his eyes, all of his efforts on storing up treasure for himself in heaven. We've got to make investments in God's spiritual bank. We have to do that throughout our lifetime in order to store up treasure for us. And sometimes it's necessary to make sacrifices in order to do this. And that's exactly the point that we're going to talk about right now. I'd like to talk to you a little about the miner's rule. I don't know if a miner has a rule. This is just something I came up with, but I imagine if a miner has land, a plot of land that he owns, and he truly believes that there's gold on the property, what is he going to do? The miner's rule in this case would be, truly valuing treasure means making sacrifices. If you believe that you have a valuable plot of land that has gold veins, or diamonds, precious stones, and you've got the ability to start digging on that property, you're going to make lots of sacrifices in order to reach that. I don't know if you read about, this happened maybe a couple years ago, some fella somewhere in the United States found a gold nugget on his property. And I can't remember what the size of it, but I'm thinking it was a large chunk of gold on his property. That's pretty amazing. And I think the article said they weren't going to disclose the location of this person or his property. It's no wonder. But can you imagine having property like that, finding a gold nugget, and someone saying, maybe someone more experienced with mining, saying, that is a clear indication that you've got a gold vein on your property. What are you going to do with that? I think most of us would be willing to make sacrifices in order to get that gold out of the ground. Hey, I could pay my daughter's college tuition with that if I had that property. You know, I could pay off the debt on my house. I could be self-supported. Wouldn't have to receive support from churches and individuals about that property and start we're able to dig on the property. We'd make all kinds of sacrifices in order to get that gold out of the mine. So that's what I'm saying. Truly valuing treasure means making sacrifices. The faithful miner understands this principle. If he values the treasure that he seeks, he will be willing to make the necessary sacrifices to achieve that goal. Many don't value what they have because they haven't had to sacrifice anything to obtain it. You've heard the expression, born with a silver spoon. Someone's born with a silver spoon in his mouth or her mouth. It refers to those who have wealth and privilege that they didn't earn. They've acquired it by means of their family, their relatives, the influence of their parents. So they don't have to work for anything. That's the phrase that we use. Born with a silver spoon in his mouth is to refer to those who don't have to work for anything that they have. It all comes to them without any effort. The parents give them almost anything they want. In Barcelona years ago, I knew a married couple. They were members of the church for a while anyway. And they owned a toy store in the same town where we had where the congregation met. And their children were extremely spoiled. Can anybody guess why? Their parents had a toy store. Right? And they weren't careful about how they used those toys. They were partly to blame for this problem. They always gave their kids toys from the store, but the toys wouldn't last very long. They would break them, and before you know it, they were asking for toys again. Give us more, more, and more. And the parents would always give them what they wanted. I've heard of parents who buy their kids a brand new car. Brand new, they pay everything. They not only purchase the car, but they pay for the insurance, the gas, the repairs on the car. And what do the kids do? Wreck it. Leslie said wreck it. Why? They didn't have to work. They don't make any sacrifices in order to obtain that vehicle. And that's ultimately, we'd say that they neglect and destroy the car because they haven't learned to place a high value on it. Because they had to work, do anything in order to get it. In order to value what God offers us, we have to be willing to make sacrifices to obtain it. And if we don't sacrifice anything, the chances are we're not going to value what He's offering us. I want you to think about that. When we talk about meeting regularly with the local church, that's just one facet, one part of our lives as Christians. But the other sacrifices that we should be making in our lives, trying to reach out to others, help others, serve others, if we don't learn to make those sacrifices in our lives as Christians, we're not going to value what God is offering to us. On the other hand, there are kids who learn to value their things because they've had to work to obtain them. As an illustration, we might think of a 16-year-old boy. We might think of my son, Jonathan, sitting over there. Jonathan's been telling me lately, Dad, I want to get a job. I need to start earning some money. So the other day, I helped him fill out an application online for working at McDonald's. I don't know if any of you are filling an application nowadays, but they're absolutely insane. They're ridiculous. I mean, when I went, years ago when I was 16 years old or so, I rode my bike to McDonald's on Route 27 in Edison, and I just walked into the store and I said, I'd like to work. And so I was able to sit down with the manager, and the manager started asking me a number of questions, and I had to fill out an application and so forth. And before I knew it, they called me and I was working there. Nowadays, you get online, you've got to fill out the application online, and it has about 80 psychological questions. They're unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable. And sometimes they're offering you two very good things, two very good options, and you have to choose one of them. Or other times, they'll offer you two very negative things. And you say to yourself, as a Christian, I won't do either of these. But you got to pick one of them that seems more appropriate. It's absurd. It's ridiculous. But Jonathan was telling me, I want to work. I want to get a job. I want to start earning some money. Let's say Jonathan, at age 16, he starts working at McDonald's. And he says, I'm going to start putting my money aside to buy a car. And he puts aside almost every cent that he earns. Puts it aside, puts it in a bank account in order to purchase his own car. And he does it until age 20 or so. When he's 20, he purchases the car of his dreams. He pays for the insurance. He pays for the gas. He pays for the repairs. Mom and Dad, we don't pay anything. How do you think he's going to take care of that car? he's going to appreciate it. Why? Because he worked hard to get it. You see the principle? The principle holds true with respect to spiritual things. We shouldn't think that we can give God the bare minimum. We're in the mine, right? And Jamari's working as hard as he can. And he's taking out, you know, tons of coal. And every 20 or 30 minutes, you know, I'll take my pick and I'll just poke it in the side of the cave and just go back to watching him work again. Am I really going to appreciate what I'm working towards if I'm making the minimal sacrifice? You see, many times we do this as Christians. We want to give God the bare minimum. We want to give God the bare minimum, and yet at the same time we think that we're going to learn to value what he's offering us. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense at all. From these examples, and I'm kind of behind on this, but from these examples, we can learn that if we sacrifice much to obtain something, then we will value it highly. If we sacrifice little to obtain something, chances are we're not going to value it at all. The passage that was read earlier, that Ernie read to us, and it's a good one, talks about a woman who valued highly God's forgiveness. And a man who apparently didn't value it as much. Let's go back to that real quick in Luke chapter 7. In Luke chapter 7, we see that this there was a sinner. It says, verse 37, there was a woman in the city who was a sinner. And when she learned that Jesus was reclining at the table in the Pharisee's house, she brought an alabaster vial of perfume. And standing behind him at his feet, weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears and kept wiping them with the hair of her head and kissing his feet and anointing them with the perfume. Now when the Pharisee who invited him saw this, he said to himself, this man were a prophet, he would know who and what sort of person this woman is and who is touching him, that she is a sinner. And then Jesus gives us a short parable of two debtors. And he says in verse 40, and Jesus answered him, Simon, I have something to say to you. And he replied, say it, teacher. A money lender had two debtors, one owed 500 denarii and the other 50. When they were unable to repay, he graciously forgave them both. So which of them will love him more? Simon answered and said, I suppose the one whom he forgave more. And he said to him, you have judged correctly. Turning toward the woman, he said to Simon, do you see this woman? I entered your house and you gave me no water for my feet, but she has wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You gave me no kiss. But she, since the time I came in, has not ceased to kiss my feet. You did not anoint my head with oil, but she anointed my feet with perfume. For this reason, I say to you, her sins, which are many, have been forgiven, for she loved much. But he who is forgiven little, loves little. See, this man gave Jesus practically nothing upon entering in his house. Whereas this woman was willing to give the best that she had. She was willing to make those sacrifices. Again, the idea is that if we sacrifice much to obtain something, we will value it highly. If we sacrifice little to obtain something, chances are we will not value it. There's a saying in Spain that goes like this. Enrich 12 men, and at the end of 6 years, 2 will be rich and 10 will be poor. Enrich 12 men, and at the end of 6 years, 2 will be rich and 10 will be poor. Gary's frowning, wondering what in the world does that mean. Strange Spanish sayings. The point is that if you don't have to do anything to get rich, chances are you won't value your possessions and you'll end up squandering them. So enrich 12 men at the end of 6 years. I don't know why 6 years. I said, enrich 12 men. The point is that as time progresses, 2 will be rich and 10 will be poor. You know, several years ago, I had the opportunity to study at Rutgers completely free. Study right here at Rutgers University, tuition free. You know, if your mother or your father works there, you don't have to pay tuition. My dad was an economics professor for several years, and after that he left Rutgers and he was working for the State Office of Economic Policy in Trenton, but my mother continued to work there. She was working at the Journal of Alcohol Studies, social work or something like that. But to make a long story short, I could go there for free. 4 years, tuition free. You know what it costs, Rutgers costs nowadays? It's appalling. I just found out the other day, Ellie got a small scholarship for Rutgers, but now they said, for those who live at home while studying at Rutgers, it's $18,000 a year. That's if you live at home. And they said, and also include an extra $6,000 per year for gas expenditures and food and things of that nature. How in the world do people are able to pay college nowadays? I don't know. But I had the opportunity to go there for free back in the 1980s. Sadly enough, I didn't take advantage of that blessing. I wasn't serious about my studies. I didn't get good grades. And in the end, I dropped out. I told my Ellie and Jonathan, please don't make the same mistake that I did. I made a lot of mistakes in my life. But I was undisciplined. But around this time, guess what? After I left Rutgers, around this time, I saw an ad in the local paper. Maybe it was a Star Ledger. And it was for a school that was offering certification in computer programming. Certification is not as good as having a diploma from a four-year school. But I thought to myself, you know, maybe if I could focus on one subject instead of being distracted by these other things in which I had no interest, maybe I would do better, even though I had no interest in computers. I said, maybe I'm going to go to this school and focus on one subject. Guess what? I got straight A's. You know what the difference was? I paid for it myself. Out of my own pocket. That made all the difference for me. When I had it handed to me on a silver platter, you know, go to Rutgers, don't worry, it's already taken care of. I guess I didn't place on the same value as I did when I started paying for the school myself. What must spiritual miners sacrifice? Again, we're saying that we're like miners. The mind is the world, and we have to keep on digging. Well, I'd like to share some other Spanish sayings with you that, of course, have been translated to English. In Spain, there's a saying that goes like this. If you want something, it'll cost you something. Simple, logical phrases, right? If you want something, it'll cost you something. Another one, what is worth much, costs much. And also, one must go through bitterness to gain beauty. Every country has their own sayings, and maybe you can think of some here in the U.S. I don't remember any. So I lived so many years outside of this country, but there are probably sayings that are similar. In Revelation chapter 3, Christ has a few words for the Christians in Laodicea who didn't value the spiritual riches that he was offering them. In Revelation chapter 3, we can start reading in verse 14. Revelation 3, verse 14. To the angel of the church in Laodicea write, the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the beginning of the creation of God, says this, I know your deeds, that you are neither cold nor hot. I wish that you were cold or hot. So, because you are lukewarm, and neither hot nor cold, I will spit you out of my mouth. Because you say I am rich, and have become wealthy, and have need of nothing, you do not know that you are wretched, and miserable, and poor, and blind, and naked. I advise you to buy from me gold refined by fire, so that you may become rich, and white garments, so that you may clothe yourself, and that the shame of your nakedness will not be revealed. An eye salve to anoint your eyes so that you may see. Those whom I love, I reprove and discipline. Therefore, be zealous and repent. When these people in Laodicea obeyed the gospel and they became Christians, did they not have at their disposition the riches of Christ? God, they were in that mind, they were working, they were progressing toward those riches. But what happened? Somewhere along the way, they had lost their attraction. They had lost their value for these people. And these Christians began to think, we're rich without having the true riches in their lives. We're rich. They had grown, they had become self-sufficient Christians. They had become lukewarm. And they were saying, I am rich and have become wealthy and I have need of nothing. So pride and self-sufficiency will keep us from progressing towards that goal, towards those riches that Christ offers us as spiritual minors. But if we really want to reach the goal, we're going to have to learn to deny self. Jesus said in Luke chapter 9, verse 23, if you want to come after me, if anyone wishes to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. Is that an easy thing to do? No, it isn't. That's why a lot of people stop digging. That's why a lot of people go back to the life they had before they were Christians. But if we want to reach the goal, we're going to have to learn to deny self. We're going to have to learn to crucify the old man. We're going to have to learn to be able to say with the Apostle Paul what he said in Galatians chapter 2, verse 20, I have been crucified with Christ, and it's no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. The people who keep digging are the ones who believe this and put it into practice in their lives. And they live for Christ. Because Christ is at the end of that mine. The riches that await us really can be resumed and can be summed up in one word, Jesus Christ. That's two words, actually. In Spanish, it's one word, Jesucristo. Jesus. He is our riches. He is the goal. He is at the end of that mine. In conclusion, then, though the work may be difficult, requiring us to dig long hours and make sacrifices, it's worth the effort. Because at the end of this mine, there's treasure. However, if we value little the riches of Christ, we're going to sacrifice little. You remember the man in whose home Jesus had entered? How much did he sacrifice to show his allegiance to Christ? Zero. And Jesus said, you love little. That's essentially what he was telling. This woman loves a lot because she's given a lot. You love little because you've given nothing. Again, we should not deceive ourselves into thinking that somehow we're going to be able to place a high value on what God is offering us when we give God the bare minimum. We have to learn to give God everything. To give Him our best. The bare minimum doesn't hack it. How much do we value the riches that God offers us? Are we working in the mine or have we stopped digging? And if you're not a Christian, I want you to think about this. If you're not a Christian, all the work that you're doing in your life, all the digging that you're doing in your life, will eventually leave you empty-handed. Because if you're not a Christian, you're not going to reach the treasure. What the promises that the world offers us is nothing more than fool's gold. So if you're not a Christian, why not obey Christ this morning? Why not become a child of God this morning and obtain the only true treasure that God offers us, and that is heaven itself, salvation. We'd like to offer you this opportunity to become a child of God this morning. If you'd like to do so, you must believe in Jesus as the Son of God. You must repent and be willing to confess your faith in Jesus, the Son of God, and be baptized, immersed in water for the forgiveness of your sins. Jesus said, while he was still on this earth, he who believes and is baptized will be saved. If you wish to do that this morning, you can. And if you're a member of the Lord's church and you realize that you haven't been digging as you should be, you've stopped digging altogether, and you want to renew your efforts to serve God more faithfully, and you'd like to request the prayers of the brethren, we'd also like to encourage you to do so and come forward as we stand together and sing the song selected.